Hey there, nice to have you with us again here at the Forum, where science comes to socialize.
Welcome back, guys. Cleo here.
And Aubrey's here as well.
On the show today, we'll be chatting about the challenges of producing animals for consumption, which are considerable.
All right, Daniela, do you want to let it out now?
What?
Are you really going to make me set you up for it?
Oh, you mean that I'm a vegetarian?
Hey, me too.
Oh, shush, Cleo. You are not a vegetarian. I've seen what you eat at ISGP conferences.
Oh, come on. Give me some credit. It's really about being mindful about the quantity of meat I consume, not being strict on myself. Anyway, Dee still eats fish, which is a sustainability issue for another episode.
All right, okay. So I'm a pescatarian, but I mean...
Anyway, if you children are done, we can maybe begin today's episode.
All right. But before we do, let's remind our listeners to communicate with us during and after listening to today's episode. Reach us on Twitter at ISGP Forum or on Facebook if you prefer, and remember to tag your post with hashtag ISGP Forum.
Today's paper up for discussion was written by Dr. Elliot Herman, a professor at the School of Plant Sciences at the University of Arizona. His policy position paper is titled, "The Challenge to Meet Global Need for Protein Sources for Animal Production."
And it was debated at the 2012 conference hosted by the Institute on Science for Global Policy in Tucson, in collaboration with the University of Arizona. Just to be thorough, in case you're interested, the conference was titled 21st Century Borders and Synthetic Biology, Focus on Responsibility and Governance.
So, Dee, why don't you kick us off, since you seem to be so in tune with the challenges of animal production for consumption?
All right, well, let's stick to tradition and start with some background info to get us all on the same page. Efficient animal production requires animal feed with high protein content, while maize, aka corn, is the most common carbohydrate source in animal production, other crops provide much more of the protein we're looking for.
And by other crops, we're talking things like soybeans, canola meal, animal byproducts, fish meal, as well as many other less abundant and region-specific sources.
And while it's true that there are many other less abundant sources, only soybeans, canola, and fish meal are truly products of global commerce, where the feed protein sources from one part of the globe are used to support animal production in other parts of the world.
And then, after the animal feed shipped from place A to place B is used to produce animals in place B, resulting animal products can even be delivered from place B to place C.
This is key because as more highly populated nations become prosperous and developed, there is and will continue to be greater pressure to increase animal production.
The impact this will have on land and water resources, not to mention competition between human food, animal feed, and fuel, oh, and also needing more people food in general because of population sizes, well, it's all a really global concern.
Right. For the foreseeable future, soybeans will remain the single greatest protein source to support animal production. Did you know that 85% of the 251 million tons of soybeans produced globally is used to produce animal feed?
Did you know that the other 15% is used to feed me at all-you-can-eat sushi places?
Sorry, I actually just laughed a lot. Don't listen to her, people.
Well, the 85% statistic is not too surprising, considering that soybeans produced in the Americas are a global commerce product and form the basis for expanding livestock production in Asia, where growth in the animal production industry has been most rapid.
Canola meal, a byproduct of seed oil production, is another major source of vegetable protein, although it amounts to only a fraction of current soybean commerce.
And don't forget fish meal.
Quite frankly, I was trying to forget it because it sounds kind of gross.
Oh, stop being so judgy. Although it sums up to only 2 to 3% of global protein commerce, fish meal remains an important protein source for animal production. In fact, 25% of all fish caught are processed just to make fish meal.
And before people start getting concerned that their beloved salmon or mahi-mahi is being crushed up and used to feed pigs and such, the types of fish used to produce fish meal are typically small white fish with large population densities that are not consumed by humans, but can be and are still caught in the wild.
Okay, so you know how in our fish we sometimes have to worry about unsafe levels of mercury and PCB pollutants? Well, as an animal feed, fish meal could transfer concentrated levels of these health hazards to the animals, which could then transfer the mercury and PCB pollutants to the humans consuming the animals that were fed with the fish feed.
Wait, hold up. First, PCB pollutants?
Right, sorry. PCBs, or polychlorinated biphenyls, are industrial products or chemicals.
So definitely not something you want in your food, really to any degree.
Okay, that definitely makes sense. So you're saying these harmful chemicals can be transferred all the way from the ocean to fish, to animals, to humans?
Yep, that's the idea.
Well, I'm definitely sticking with the steamed soybeans now.
Might not be the worst idea, Aubrey. And this has attracted the attention of government regulators, who have issued warnings against consumption of fish meal fed aquaculture products. In other words, farmed fish that have been fed fish meal, cannibalism much? Whatever, anyway, farmed fish that have been fed fish meal might have high mercury levels.
The use of fish meal can also have a negative impact on the marine environment since it removes forage fish, or bottom of the food chain fish, which other aquatic species rely on for food.
Ugh. And to finally get off the subject of fish meal, I guess I'll also mention that byproducts of terrestrial animals are a significant source of feed protein, contributing about 4-6% to the pie. Although, to be fair, in the aftermath of the mad cow episode in Europe, their use has been greatly diminished by regulation and by consumer choice.
Hold up. What are terrestrial animal byproducts? I'm getting all sorts of ET alien images here.
That doesn't even make sense.
That's extraterrestrial, Dee.
Whatever, guys. It's been a long day.
Okay, so terrestrial animals are those that live on land. We know that much, right? Well, then terrestrial animal byproducts are animal carcasses, unused animal parts like hooves, or other materials which come from animals but aren't meant for humans to eat. They can either be destroyed as waste, or they can be used to make compost, or, in this case, reprocessed feed protein.
Mmm, yum.
And this is why I'm vegetarian.
Yeah, we know. Though if you're actually a pescatarian, then we can get back to the fish meal topic.
Okay, ew, no. I'll promise I'll stop.
Anyway, it's interesting to note that there has been limited use of synthetic or transgenic biology. Think of genetic engineering or modification here to improve the content and quality of plant protein products used for animal feed.
Right. More effort in this field has actually focused on improving the protein quality for crops used for human consumption, though.
Oh, this is one of my dissertation topics.
Oh boy, one of the million ideas? I swear you have a different topic every week.
Oh, what can I say? I have a lot of passions over here.
All right. Well, if this is one of your things, Dee, then go for it.
Well, while it is true that efforts have been made to improve the content and quality of crops consumed by humans, the development of these products has actually been somewhat blocked by anti-GMO politics. Nonetheless, the Gates Foundation has funded biotechnology projects seeking to improve protein content and quality of staple crops, especially in Africa. Other international programs have used conventional breeding to create rice and maize with enhanced essential amino acid balance.
Right, and there have been similar breeding efforts to bolster the major feed protein crops, which are, of course, soybeans and canola. But these efforts have had little impact.
Which is unfortunate, because the improvement of feed crops through biotechnology is needed to enhance their production yield and quality. As the major global source of feed protein, the soybean's central role in the feed industry has made its long-term enhancement a strategic objective.
True, but additional sources of plant protein are needed because soybeans only grow well in certain regions of the world.
Oh, and if these additional crops could be grown productively and economically in regions where soybeans are not produced, I'd imagine they'd quickly become important players in the food production chain.
Well, such crops might be optimal for the cooler northern regions currently dominated by cereal production. They could also tolerate the arid and more saline regions of the globe.
This is true, and although at the time of this conference, the use of synthetic biology for crop enhancement was still in its infancy, developments have certainly been made since. Almost all current GM crops exhibit traits limiting the impact of insects, viruses, or competitive weeds, which primarily benefit producers.
More recently, consumer-valued traits have begun to emerge in these designed crops, such as low trans-fat soybean oil, which is a tad better for you if used as a source of fry oil. As such, engineering plant protein quality and quantity to date has largely focused on the starchy staple crops used as human food in less developed nations.
Right. A controversial topic often discussed with my university colleagues is the idea of biofortification.
Hey, don't forget about us. Beyond your university conversations, we here on the forum have often talked about the process of enhancing nutritional content through the use of biotechnology, or in other words, biofortification. We have at least 5 episodes on the subject.
All right, well, Cleo, no worries over here. Definitely not forgetting you. Although, if you don't come visit me soon, I may as well consider it.
Ooh, Danielle is feeling sassy today.
Just kidding. Of course, I would much rather socialize here with you guys and with science. Cleo, you've always got my attention.
Anyway, God, you two are so needy sometimes. Back to our conversation on biotechnologies, which may actually be able to be used to create a new soybean variety based on other crops. The soybean 2.0, if you will.
This is a tad confusing, so let's make sure our listeners are clear. By altering the genetic programming of other crops, it's possible to use synthetic biology to engineer these crops to have protein quality that's similar to soybeans. And voila, soybean 2.0.
One example can be found in a University of Arizona project in which camelina, an oilseed crop related to canola, has been altered to have traits very similar to soybean plants.
Camelina grows in northern climates, tolerates arid and marginal conditions, and can be grown as a winter crop, so its use can enhance the productivity of existing farmland that can't support more high-maintenance crops for parts of the year.
This soybean-like camelina is therefore being developed as a potential feed source because it can be grown in competition with maize and soybeans, especially on marginal land.
Marginal land?
Oh yeah, I forgot I'm the only one who worked on a farm long term. Marginal land basically just refers to land that is difficult to farm and usually has little potential for profit.
Right. And in addition, camelina's other favorable characteristics are that it's not used as human food, thereby avoiding the polarizing and politicized issue of having transgenics in food. And because it is European in origin, there are no native plants capable of genetic outcrossing with camelina in the US and in non-European countries.
Genetic outcrossing?
Yeah. Basically, the introduction of unrelated genetic material into a breeding line, which isn't always what you want to happen in nature. In a lab, fine, but in nature, not so much.
In any case, current camelina production has been directed at biofuels, and only providing feed protein as a side product.
But debaters predicted a role reversal here, with protein feed becoming the primary focus and oil becoming a byproduct as animal production demands increase.
All right, so we understand at this point that rising prosperity in high population countries is accelerating animal production, and we also understand that certain crops can be engineered to increase the protein content of feed. The latter technology can sustain the former increase in demand. But how does all of this come together in practice? I mean, who's going to take charge? And how do we get the public on board?
Good questions, Cleo. Well, debaters agreed that the increasing need for protein sources for livestock feed is a global concern and should be supported through education and research investments by transnational projects.
Yeah, there are ample opportunities for NGOs as well as governments to use livestock feed for bilateral and multinational projects.
Well, I guess there are many international organizations involved in crop improvement, but none of them are specifically directed at animal feed.
Well, the Food and Agriculture Organization, or the FAO, and the Pew Trust and other organizations have published white papers on the needs of and looming crisis in animal production. But you are right. These have not specifically called for establishing one or more international centers encompassing feed for terrestrial and aquatic animal species.
Such centers, if established, would need to bridge crop improvement and animal health and production. Animal feed research centers will need funding streams, which would require government, industry, and foundation support.
Believing that such research centers are crucial and should be developed, the debaters suggested 5 key policy strategies and goals for the centers to encompass. We'll go into detail for each recommendation, but let's outline them for the audience to get a quick overview. Ready?
First and foremost is the need to enhance the productivity and composition of current feed crops.
Second, develop new feed crops.
Third, address the competition between biofuels and feed.
Fourth, increase regional production of alternative vegetable feed.
And fifth, abolish the use of fish meal for animal feed and replace it with sustainable vegetable protein.
So, to begin, enhancing the productivity and composition of the current feed crops is crucial because, as a global commodity, fractional increases in soybean production could have immense impact. The difficulty in addressing this challenge is that soybean trait enhancements will likely be transgenic through synthetic biology, and thus the challenge of regulatory impediments, often rooted in public opposition or confusion, will be persistent.
To follow, there are thankfully many plants that could be developed into enhanced feed using synthetic biology. The camelina research underway at the University of Arizona is but one possible example. In 2013, the U.S. Department of Agriculture adopted the National Program 301, Plant Genetic Resources, Genomics, and Genetic Improvement. According to the strategic vision of the program, the fund is currently geared towards the development of new crops by furnishing genetic, genomic, and bioinformatic tools, information, and genetic resources to enhance American agricultural productivity and ensure a high-quality, safe supply of animal feed among human food and biofuels.
To our third point, it's crucial to address the competition between biofuels and feed. The use of food crops for fuel is increasingly controversial, as it essentially means exchanging global food supplies for fuel, which would predominantly benefit industrialized nations.
There's a growing world opinion that using food as fuel increases food costs and decreases supply.
So moving to next-generation biofuels or non-biological alternatives will increase global food supply. Synthetic biology could then enable the development of fuel crops or algae to be superior sources of fuel, freeing up the food crops that are currently converted to ethanol and biodiesel oil.
So, from a policy perspective, global funding and incentives for next-generation biofuels should evolve quickly to support the goal of returning food and feed crops to their traditional use, feeding things.
This leads us right into the debater's fourth point about the need to increase regional production of alternative vegetable feed. With soybeans and maize serving as the primary global feed supplies, the center of their production in the Americas is simply too far from major animal production sites in Asia.
Thus, alternative feed sources from other continents will improve sustainability and economic viability. Alternative feed development should be a priority for international research centers funded by government and NGOs, needing only a small fraction of the funding now assigned to research on important human food crops.
Last but not least, the use of fish meal for animal feed should be ceased and replaced with sustainable vegetable protein. Fish meal provides only a small fraction of global protein for animal production, but its use has a major impact on world fisheries and ocean productivity.
Well, this is ironic considering the amount of fish you eat.
Oh, shush. My individual impact on fisheries is incomparable to the impact of fish meal for animal feed.
And that, my friends, is called the tragedy of the commons.
Anyway, moving forward, we can use transgenic synthetic biology approaches to create fish meal alternatives.
In this way, it should be feasible to engineer sustainable vegetable protein substitutes for the small fraction of global feed protein currently supplied by fish meal.
Oh, the wonders of biotech.
Well, I guess now seems a fine time to wrap things up for the day. If not, we risk a full-fledged argument between me and Daniela about her consumption patterns.
Sure. So the issue here is that heightened prosperity in high population countries has accelerated animal production. This has resulted in the annual demand for animal feed globally rising to 1 billion tons. So it's no surprise that there's an emerging crisis for new sources of high-quality protein feed to support animal production.
The current situation is that today, animal production relies on soybeans, which form the bulk of world commerce involving feed protein. Current trends show that soybean and alternative protein crops will be needed to keep pace with demands for global livestock feed.
And the solutions proposed by our debaters involved the use of biotechnology and synthetic biology methods to enhance soybean production and develop new feed sources by essentially reconfiguring other crops as protein production platforms comparable to soybeans.
Protein production platforms. Now that is some high-quality alliteration.
So now tell us what you think. Not about Daniela's alliteration, but about feed protein.
How do you think we should address the increasing need for protein feed sources to support animal production?
Could biotechnologies be the answer? Or do you have other ideas in mind? Joining me in rethinking the consumption of poor little animals, perhaps?
Oh, stop being so annoying, Dee. Anyway, if you listeners want to join the conversation, make sure to tune in by tweeting us at ISGB Forum or giving our Facebook page a visit.
Thanks for socializing with science today.
We'll catch you next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.